Welcome to the fifth episode of the Meet the Mancunian podcast, season 3. I'm Deepa Thomas Sutcliffe, host of the Meet the Mancunian podcast, which introduces listeners to inspirational Mancunians making a difference in the local community. Whether they run a charity or a social enterprise, volunteer or coach others, host a community or go it alone, all my guests have fascinating stories to tell. Sit back, relax, and listen in to season 3 of the Meet the Mancunian. Tune into your favorite podcasting platforms every Tuesday. Passionate about supporting women changemakers? We hear from Nikayla Talkington, co-founder of Flourish, in this episode. I'm delighted to introduce my guest, Nikayla Talkington, co-founder of Flourish Together. Thank you, Nikayla, for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So, Nikayla, tell us about how you found your passion for social enterprises.
Oh my, passion for social enterprise, it's happened such a long time ago. I think I definitely had a passion for justice and social change and supporting people from being a child, but I don't think you really noticed that until, I was always a doer. I was never on my soapbox. Nobody would particularly describe me as a feminist from a young age or anything like that, but I'm organised, I get things done, and I think when you can do that, you stand out, because whilst other people are still thinking about it, you've already done it. And so in the social enterprise world, a lot of social entrepreneurs, change makers, people trying to create change for the better, they spot injustice, they want to make change, and they, you know, try to find ways to make things better. And so those are the principles, I guess, that sort of led me down this track. I think in terms of how it came together, it's only when I look back, I've been on various leadership programs from time to time, and those are great for giving you an opportunity to reflect. So things like, I don't know, Common Purpose, there was a program called Lead Manchester, Lead Cheshire. I worked for an organisation called Unlimited for a long time, which was it's a very experiential sort of learning, and got a good learning culture as a national organisation. And so I got the luxury of having a lot of time to think about where has this come from. And I know it was always there, but it ultimately, there's definitely that day where the story I tell when I'm present or I'm in places, and if people are listening and they've heard me talk before, they'll hear me give the tale about how I just realised that, you know, the particular role that I was in at the time, I got sick of lining my boss's pockets to buy another Audi TT and another holiday home in Dubai. And the work wasn't particularly fulfilling. I had this kind of epiphany and I ended up working in the charity sector. So I guess there's a few strands that were in my nature that came together. And then this, having worked, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a great company. I was very starstruck. It was a wonderful opportunity coming out of university as a product and furniture designer. You know, I had a great first graduate job. And that first job was fab, but I quickly realised it wasn't for me. By the time I was 22, I was getting my hands dirty cleaning carpets in a brand new national charity that was forming called Unlimited, and it didn't exist. And I'm very good at making the impossible happen. And I think, you know, that's where it all began, really. It was a job that didn't exist, sorting out the admin and logistics for a brand new charity. And I couldn't wait to get my hands dirty and learn about what the hell's the charity sector. I'd never heard of it. You know, what was that? Where could it lead me? And although I can, you know, I could have probably set up the office and done all the admin work with my eyes shut. That's what I told myself, and that's what I managed to do. It gave me a training ground to learn about the charity sector, about how you can use enterprise for social good, and the charity sector is a wonderful place to create a career. You know, I found that, and I still tell people that now. You know, if you're struggling with the private sector, or if you're struggling with the public sector, the charity sector might be for you to help you unlock your potential, create change whilst make a difference. So that's me, and that's kind of a bit of the journey I've been on, and that's what we now kind of cascade and empower and instill in others now through Flourish Together, to grow their economic independence, to create social change, to lobby for what they need or change what they want to see improved.
This is amazing. So tell us about how we started Flourish together.
I'd worked in and out of Unlimited for a number of times in different initiatives. I'd actually come out when I had my son and help, you know, I've got into a different business that was all about enterprise and mental health. So I guess I'd worked in the national charity sector. I'd worked a little bit in the local charity sector. I'd set up a number of social enterprises that were all about enterprise and mental health. And I'd learned how you can build supply chains and social enterprise and voluntary and charity trading arms, I guess, in terms of a different way of making sure that these nonprofits earned money and were part of a serious supply chains that any sector would need. There's a few things that came to a head. So after having had this sort of national and local charity experience and large scale sort of charitable experience, coupled with localized experience and some sector specific stuff, I'd probably set up about 5 social enterprises physically and operationally at this point, and I'd helped over 2,000 people set up social ventures. I'd gone back to Unlimited, and we'd ran this amazing program working with 90 universities to get them to think differently about entrepreneurship and social innovation and social leadership. And I realized from the stats, I already knew that Unlimited was working with about 50% wow. of the people that had the cash awards and support from them were women, and which I knew was unusual, because I know that in mainstream business support and certain other startup grants, certainly in the last 15, 20 years plus, less women have accessed that money. And even in the worlds of social investment and venture capitalist stuff, women are underrepresented, and there are shocking statistics about how men get the lion's share of this money, even when people are pitching the same concept. There's research into all this. So all of these sort of factors, knowing that there were lots of women out there that were accessing this support and we knew how to get there, seeing that the university sector actually, and who we were working with at that time, where I was actually working with more women than men for the first time. And that was an eye-opener to me. And it was actually my colleagues at the time who convinced me this would be a good idea. And I'd gone and worked for a women's organisation in Liverpool called Blackburn House. I'd been gifted the opportunity to play with Department of Health money and set up a health spa and wellbeing centre. It was I think it's the first social enterprise health spa and wellbeing centre in the Northwest that I'd come across. And under Claire Dove and Joe McGrath, who I work alongside, who became my business partner for Flourish, that we set this up together, I set up this health spa and wellbeing centre. And I'd never worked with just women. I'd worked in retail with just women, but it was an eye-opener. Working for Blackburn House was an eye-opener. It was an alternative education centre for mainly women, where the delights of, you know, various parts of the community, people who have privilege, people who don't, come together for all sorts of things at Blackburn House was quite an eye-opener. And then having then gone away and worked with the universities and seen staff, students, graduates, and, you know, over 50% of the support and the cash awards going to women, when that some of that program started to wrap up and we created an opportunity with our colleagues to say, you know, this is what I've talked about, the learning culture. With the beauty of that organization at the time is knowing these funded programs come to an end, we sat there having an away day thinking, what on earth are we going to do next? And we designed our own away day, basically, to help colleagues figure out what they didn't know, kind of open that Johari window, as they say, trying to work out what you weren't aware of. And we created these exercises where colleagues told us, you know, we had some questions, where would we be now if we weren't here, and, you know, to try to open our thinking. But one of the questions that we tried to answer for each other was, if I wasn't doing this job, what would you see me doing? And it was quite weird, out of 6 or 7 colleagues, half of them, we had like these secret envelopes where there was maybe 6 questions that we set each other, and we were sat writing what we thought the answers were for these questions. And this question around, if I wasn't doing this job right now, if I hadn't run this program, what do you see me doing? What should I be doing? And half of my colleagues said, you should be running a women's organization. And I was like, I didn't say don't be ridiculous, but I'd never thought of it. So that's my nature as well. I'm quite up for going where the wind takes me. You know, I'm quite happy for that. And I think a combination of having had these experiences through my career, combination of other colleagues telling me in unison, maybe you should do this. And at the time, another part of my story, really, you know, I'd had this marriage breakdown. I was bringing up a 4-year-old on my own. I think there were 2 or 3 years gone by at this point when I was like juggling all this stressful, quite hard going work that I loved and juggling single motherhood. The thought of setting up an organisation that could support women, it all came together. And so I knew that without the education that I'd had, without the support networks and family support that I'd had, and without having been able to get on the property ladder at a young age, because I took a risk and my parents gave me £3,000 and I bought a dodgy terrace house in the deepest, darkest Blackburn. But it was a fantastic opportunity for me, and it's an opportunity that frustrates me that can't happen now, or I don't know how we get back to those days. Certainly having those opportunities definitely were the catalyst to want to support women to lead change they see needed, to want to help them build their economic independence. And looking back then, clearly I was motivated to do this. My co-founder Joe McGrath, who'd worked with me at Blackburn House, was a great co-founder to evolve this. We worked very hard together. We worked very collaboratively and in tandem for the last sort of 8 years. She's only just recently stepped down, partly out of circumstance and partly, to challenge herself in new ways. But they're sort of in support. These factors that made it all possible helped create a fantastic organisation that supported over 1,000 women now. And we work with all sorts of public sector, a few private sector partners and other social entrepreneurs to help hundreds of people every year take the kinds of risks they don't believe are possible and make a difference and earn a living and create social change.
That's amazing. Thanks so much for sharing it with us. I do have a question. So were there some significant challenges that you faced along this journey of yours?
Yeah, well, interestingly, yesterday, we were running a session around income generation. And one of the biggest fears and one of the biggest challenges is holding your nerve and making it work financially. And what I already knew and I had to kind of put into practice, I think I probably tried to do something a couple of times and I wouldn't go as far as to say failed, because it's all part of learning. But I developed this thing called the sounding board network, which was a kind of precursor to this. The sounding board sessions are a tool and a kind of service that we offer now, but I wanted to develop this thing called the sounding board network, but I couldn't see how to make it financially viable. The model worked, my networks would come together and support these events and these sessions, but I couldn't see. I'm like, well, how am I going to make this financially work? And I did get paid to do bits, but it wasn't going to be a permanent day-to-day thing. So I think in order to come over the challenges of how am I going to make a living out of this, I've had to test and pilot. We've probably spent, Joe and I, a good 2 or 3 years piloting what worked and testing what worked. And so we grew our organisation very organically. We built a lot of trust. We built a lot of respect with people at various levels and layers. And that's stuck with us, really. And people have seen that we're not just in it for the money. You know, we're in it for the change and we're in it for the long haul. So many characters in the charity sector leap from these different roles, and they have to, that's their thing. Or certain organisations will only do what they're funded to do. We've never been like that. We know, we listen to what the community needs and we try to provide that. And we try to provide a consistent core of something that we know the community wants and bolt on all this other stuff that we know we can get paid for. So I guess, the challenge of making the business model work is something that we've worked very hard to do. And I think it took us a good 3 or 4 years to figure out what our business model was. And then we're now a good 8 years old now, and I'm proud to say that we've made a profit year on year, you know, small profits, but we've not made a loss. You know, we're a profit making non-profit, and we need to do that. There's no point being a non-profit if you can't put your profits back and create profits, you know, to put back in the community. And over the last 8 years or so, we've, in addition to covering our overheads, washing our faces, you know, being paid for what we do for the last, you know, 5 years plus consistently, we've invested getting on for £35,000 in women in seed funding. So, you know, I think if you set yourself a goal, if you know we have to make this profit because we want to invest it in people, if the profit doesn't exist, we can't do a big part of what we planned. That keeps us motivated. You know, we might not be motivated. I mean, don't get me wrong, we've got to keep a roof over our head. Knowing that the big part of what we're trying to do at Flourish, that challenge for me is even more so today. I watched the news tonight, economic crisis stuff. You're listening to a principal in a college in Manchester saying just, you know, 12 kids in every 30 are living below the poverty line, which is just makes my blood boil and makes me very upset. How on earth do we help families and women get out of that poverty trap, get out of the benefits trap? And, you know, there's a long way to go, but I know through the programs that we've been running through COVID and in the last 2 or 3 years, the stats on the numbers of women that we've supported to get back to work, to get to set up their own social ventures is high. And the women that we're working with, you know, 40% said that they'd have got mental health issues at the start of the program. 50% were unemployed at the time of coming to work with us. And, you know, well over 50% are in work or setting up their own venture by the end of the program. So it's these sorts of, you know, it's a challenge knowing if you're making a difference. And I think because we're social value specialists, we've been able to put methods in place to know we are making a difference and know where we could do better. I'm training other people that we work with to know they're making that difference, partly so they can sleep at night, partly so they can adapt what they're doing, and partly to build a case to argue for where that budget and that money and those funds need to be drawn into what they're doing to help them grow and sustain what they do.
That's amazing. You're answering a lot of my questions. I was going to ask what impact have you made, but you've talked about that.
Oh, I could talk about that for, I think that, you know, it's, you know, the women that we work with are the impact, and they, you know, they inspire us day in, day out. That's why it's just a joy doing what we do. Don't you know, it's pretty hard and it's gotten harder. And I think when we first started doing this, we just saw ourselves as, we were enterprise support. You know, we were just infrastructure, social enterprise support. And what we've realised through measuring our impact and what we've realised through trying to understand what are the barriers for women who've got these great ideas. Women make brilliant leaders. They make brilliant entrepreneurs. What holds them back? And we've been researching and looking at this for a long time. And so rather than just be an enterprise provider or enterprise support provider or economic development people, we're really trying to support people who wouldn't otherwise get there to do this and to create that change and to earn living in new, and living in new ways and to lift them out of hardship. And so things like we realise that most of the women or a lot of the women we work with are going through some sort of identity change, actually, either because of what setbacks they've faced or because of where they're at in their life when they come to us or how they're not being taken seriously, whatever, at home, at work, with their health, all sorts of every different kind of reason. We've had to really help women re-engineer themselves. And that's, you know, there's not a course for that. We've had to, we've had to evolve these and we know we've got some magic as to how to do that now. We've had to help women to learn about business acumen and stop being their own worst enemy sometimes and, you know, take control and lead and know that it's okay to charge for what they're doing and value their time and their worth and stuff. So that all takes time. Some people get that straight away. Some people, that takes years. Some people never going to quite feel comfortable with that, and we really have to talk to them in a way that's going to get them to see why that's so important. And then the last quick thing I would say on that is, you know, you can look at people's setbacks and identity to overcome certain things to be the women change maker they want to be. You can look at the business and sustainability angles and the leadership and innovation angles around where they want to go, what they want to do. But where we've come to currently is realizing, partly through COVID and partly through these programs we've been running the last few years, we've really been watching and listening. Where do women get there quickest, and where are women not getting there when they really should? It's very clear to us when we work with 30 women on a program, the ones that they're through the door and they're off and they're running within 6 to 9 months. And where are the ones that aren't? And you could peel back various layers of an onion, you know, mental health, financial resilience, and housing situation are ultimately what is stopping people. Everything else, you can fix some of the other stuff. Those three things are much harder to support with. And so, you know, we've ended up building in support around mental health and counselling and life coaching and other things to help around some of that. We've worked with hundreds of women working in health and wellbeing businesses, so we've got them at our fingertips now to support people. But looking at housing and finance security is something that's a big goal. That's our new impact, if you will. We're not there yet, but there's these other building blocks and pieces of the jigsaw that we've learned and that we do alongside what we thought we'd ever be doing to help women lead that change and make that difference. But if we can help women have, you know, personal equilibrium, financially, emotionally, and in the housing situation, so many more women would be able to lead that change that they want to. And that's our next goal.
That is very interesting. So basically, resilience and confidence probably are two parts of the success factors maybe that comes in, because, you know, that gives you that stability and your energies are then spent on the right things rather than on, survival.
Absolutely. But what we're finding is housing, where people live, their financial ability to keep a roof over their head, and, you know, whether they're living in social housing, private housing, whether they own their own home, all of these things make a big difference. And, you know, we want women to be able to have that equilibrium in their lives for themselves and for their families, so that they can build a base on which to not be held back when, you know, so many women, they'll keep volunteering, or they'll keep on universal credit, or they'll keep on whatever it is. They're trapped in a housing situation that's just chronic for them. You know, we want to try and help them think through how to get around some of these barriers so that they can be the entrepreneurs and the social entrepreneurs that they should be. And that's what we've been working on in recent times, and we'll continue to over the coming
years. That is fascinating. What advice would you have for people looking to start a similar movement in another part of the world? We've got listeners now from 35 countries.
Fantastic. I think they're probably already doing it, and they're probably doing it better than we are. You know, from what I've learned over the years, I have done a little bit of travelling. I've had the, you know, good fortune to travel through to India. I've done programs and design programs that have happened out in Thailand, and had some insight into the world of Thailand. I've had a little bits of insight into different parts of Europe and Eastern Europe, bits of America, and little bits of Africa, but not enough. I'd like to do more. But because I'm you know, I've been watching what other parts of the world do, and particularly women's movements and women's groups do, I think we've got a lot to learn from how women in other parts of the world already do this. That would be my thing. And if people are wanting to do this, don't look to the UK or America, because the models of operating and where the resources come from and the challenges, the day-to-day challenges and the scale of challenge are all very different. That's what I've learned from my time spent in India in particular, other countries. I know when I've worked with people in India before, they've said that European models and European networks can be quite helpful. There's things to learn there. Sometimes the American models can be just a little bit too far detached or removed, or base themselves heavily on philanthropic thinking as opposed to entrepreneurial thinking. So I think depends what people are wanting to do, doesn't it? I think there's so much social enterprise activity, be that through individuals, be that through communities, be that through cooperatives, be that through purpose-led businesses that are now doing things differently, be that through ethical tech. I think depending on what people's knowledge and passion is, getting really into the detail a little bit of what you want to learn, you know, granulating down into what you want to know, perhaps save you learning time, because there's a lot you could pick up, but is it relevant to you? So looking at that, there's certainly lots of case studies, and there's some great networks around the world around innovation. I personally am more interested in the community-led ones than the kind of big corporate prize fund ones. I'm not sure it exists now, but Global Social Enterprise Network was a really interesting one. Agunte, they did work with women all over the world, is an interesting one. So Pioneers Post is a magazine that's produced here in the UK, but they've got a global interest, and they have put a lens on how social enterprise works in different parts of the world. The British Council work in all sorts of countries all over the world for their British Council stuff and learning and education and building relationships for all sorts of industries. But they have a very strong understanding of social enterprise and building movements. And so there's some really good existing practice and networks that people can go and look up to see, could they get help from these places, and how might I learn from them? So those would be my tips. I don't know if they're quite the right tips, but
no, those are your tips. So they're right for you. So that's fine. And I think it's interesting. You're like, grow local, look to your local environment rather than look to, maybe markets which may not be quite at the same life stage as those markets. So that's interesting.
I think so. I think there's certainly more we need to do to connect as women globally and every on a level rather than on this developing world. I think the way the developing the philanthropic model is how women's organizations have been supported, in my view, or the women in tech world, and they're both there's definitely a gap to just have and I would say this, women or social entrepreneurs to come together to learn from each other without being put through a lens of philanthropy or tech or urban versus rural or developing world versus developed world. I think if we could look at each other as we've all got assets and we've all got learning and we've all got knowledge to bring to the table, there's no... creating space to have conversations from that starting point would really, really help us share knowledge, learn more, and create some collaborative partnerships where new work can happen.
That's very interesting. How can interested people reach out to you and learn more?
So if people want to get in contact with Flourish Together or me, I'm very active on Twitter. So I'm at Nicola5, N-I-C-K-A-L-A, at Nicola and the number 5. We're at Flourish CIC. That's the easiest way. We have a website, flourishtogether.org.uk. We actually have our own podcast series, which is hosted on Audio Boom or put out through various channels. And so that's the Women Supporting Social Enterprise podcast. We're not as prolific as you. I think we've only done about 12 and one kind of series, and we're looking into our next approach. But we've got lots of stories and tips, and the focus on that has been less about journeys of individuals and more about knowledge sharing on how to get ahead in social enterprise. But those are some of the best ways to get in touch. We have a Facebook group and things like that as well, but people are probably best to answer through the website and through Twitter and through our podcasts.
Thanks for that, Nicola. I'll be adding your website to the show notes as well. An opportunity for you to talk about anything that I didn't get a chance to ask.
I'll tell you what I'll mention. So something new for us that's come about in the last year or so is the How To Festival. And I'd invite your listeners and I'd invite you to perhaps get involved in the How To Festival. And if we can share that in the show notes, it'd be worth people finding out about. The How To Festival is... kind of what it says is how to do all sorts of things. What we realized, because we've worked with hundreds of women change makers and guys as well, and so many of them are so knowledgeable, they know what they don't know isn't worth knowing. And also it's across different streams. This festival it's got a creative and digital zone, it's got a social enterprise support zone, and it's got a health and well-being zone. So we've tried to pull on the strengths of our network and what they know and what they can share tips and information on. And there's little bite-sized learning, basically. And so if people have got how-to sessions they might want to run, they could come and share those with us. There's already about 20 little mini webinars in there. And then we're hoping there'll be about at least 50 plus by the end of the year. So that's probably something that if, you know, people are using digital tools and like these sort of remote ways of linking to people and learning, then the How To Festival might be something that they want to warm to. And ultimately, we're trying to showcase talent, you know, grassroots talent, individuals that you wouldn't otherwise hear about, and help amplify their businesses, their social change causes, the information that they want, they want to get out there and want to share.
That sounds fascinating. When is the How To Festival?
It's running now, so people can look at the website howtofestival.org.uk, and they can see how to sign up and get involved in that. And there's sections on how to create your own little how-to session, or people can just register and get involved with that.
Lovely. Thank you for that. I'm going to now talk to you about signature questions, which I ask all my guests. So the first one is, what do you love the most about Manchester?
The people. I think, you know, it can be a pretty grey, it can be a pretty drab looking place sometimes, but the people are the best thing about Manchester. The diversity of the people, you know, we've got the 10 boroughs, there's so much, they're so different, and yeah, I the people through and through.
And where's your favourite place in Manchester?
We've ended up, so one of my favourite places is the Resonance Centre. It's a place that only opened in the last couple of years. It used to be a kitchen and bathroom company. The woman that set it up did all these kitchens and bathrooms with her colleagues and a business partner, Ralph, and others for years. And they had an epiphany and decided they were done with kitchens and bathrooms. And they wanted to give this old schoolhouse, which is what it was once upon a time, back for community use. And they stopped the kitchen business, and they now run yoga and well-being and community activities. And it's in North Manchester. It's in an area that's needing quite a bit of regeneration. And it's like a little oasis and bit of bliss in the middle of North Manchester. So that's currently my favourite place. But where else? Another place that I love in Manchester that people would know, I get down to quite a lot, is Levenshulme and Levenshulme Market. Levenshulme's well worth looking up. And the people who run Levenshulme Market and lots of the traders there, it was the first social enterprise market, you know, in and around Manchester. I think there's a couple of others popped up, but it's Levenshulme Market CIC. So they're a community interest company. And I've done a lot of work to help them right at the start, find the money to get started, then get some more money to evolve what they were doing. And then they kindly invited me back years later to do their social value report 5 years on. And it was very cathartic to see, you know, what you've spent time and supported the initial team to get moving and the change that it made and what it's still doing now. And there's great food and drinks and various social and ethical traders in that market that you don't see in other markets. And
I'd love to talk to them and other people that you can connect me to, but we can chat after. What's the most important life lesson you've learned?
I don't like saying it out loud because it sounds really airy-fairy, but sometimes there's a, you know, that whether people believe this or not, there's an element of a path that's predetermined for you. And I think, you know, give in to the universe or give in to the ether, you know, if things aren't working or you're banging your head against a wall, there's not a good fit there. There's not a good match. It might be to do with the people around you. It might be to do with negative energy. It might be to do with you, just the skill and the will of what you're trying to do at that time is not right. And so, like I said earlier, you know, going where the wind takes you. I'm definitely a few times in my life I sometimes say, you know, I'm going to go like Mary Poppins and go where the wind takes me. That's, you know, that usually lands me in the safest and best place. And I'm, you know, that's not for everybody. You know, you can't be like that and you can't live like that if you're not prepared to take risks, and you need to know where everything works out. But trust, you know, trust yourself, trust the universe, and trust the direction of the journey that you're on. And it for me anyway, life unfolds, and although I've been very good at ignoring my intuition on a couple of things over the years, and sometimes those alarm bells are ringing that loud, I couldn't even hear them. Actually, if you can find a way to trust yourself and trust in the path that's unfolding, then things usually work out.
I like that very much. And I think I can relate a lot to what you're saying. I believe also universe is listening. So give it your wishes and give it a chance to help you. Mary Poppins, click, 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 and here off we go. That is interesting. If someone wrote a book on your life, what would they title it?
And the first thing, you know, I remember, you know, I'll sleep when I'm dead is probably, you know, I'll sleep when I'm dead. I know that's probably a Bon Jovi song or somebody else come up with, sleep when I'm dead. I wish, you know, I'd crack that nut and I was a little bit more relaxed and I treated myself to a little bit more, you know, self-care and put myself first and my own dreams and ideals. I think because my passion and mission for social change is so aligned to who I am and how I am, it can be all encompassing. And I think lots of people find that when they work in this sector, and, you know, you hit 40 or you hit whatever age you hit and you think, oh, I haven't yet gone, oh, there must be more to life than this. Cause I do love what I do and I can see I'm going to keep enjoying it for years to come, but there is a little niggle. There's a little niggle in the corner of my mind that is definitely making me aware of new ways of being, a new path and a new style of life that I've got to explore. Yeah, because you never know the minute. And I think, yeah, being able to have a bit more, you know, work-life balance is something that's been on my radar for a while now. So, yes, I'll be looking out for your future podcasts on work-life balance.
That is interesting. And that's something that I think I struggle with myself. But again, this has been really interesting for me. And Nikhila, I'm at the end of my questions. So if you're okay, we could say thank you to each other.
Perfect. And, you know, it's been an honour to be invited. I'm glad those links came through, I think, through our Facebook group to kind of kickstart this. I'm sorry it's taken a little while to get it together, but we got there in the end. And look forward to hearing the results and seeing what people make of what they're hearing. And I will definitely make the time to go and have a listen to some of your wider Meet the Mancunian podcast. I think it's a great concept.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And I hope to support Flourish Together and whatever they're doing as well.
Yeah, there was definitely lots of opportunities there, so we'll be in touch for sure.
I really enjoyed learning about supporting women changemakers today. Thank you so much for listening to the 5th episode of the Meet the Mancunian podcast, Season 3. I know many of you are listening in from different parts of the world or across the UK. I hope this episode and the podcast itself motivates you to follow your dreams and passions, inspired by the amazing Mancunian guests feature here. Tune in every Tuesday for a new episode. Next week, the Meet the Mancunian talks to Nick Bimlett, who is focused on men's mental health. Tune in on Tuesday, 30th August 2022, to hear the next episode. Please do consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. I would also be grateful if you could share this podcast with a friend or a family member. Thank you so much.